Hello, Texas, America, and the world. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our special guest today is Paul Fromm of the Canadian Association for Free Expression. Paul Fromm has been victimized by something that is absolutely beyond belief, that this could happen in the Western Hemisphere, that it could happen in Canada, and folks, I think it could happen in this country as well. The long and the short of it is that Paul Fromm has been having difficulties since 1991. It began when he was the target of a six-year campaign of leaked news stories and harassment by the Canadian Jewish Congress and the League for Human Rights of B'nai B'rith. They were pressuring the Peel Board of Education to fire Paul as a school teacher up there in Canada for his political activities, which, as Mark Glenn underscores, took place on his own time and off of school property. But that was just the beginning. What started with a series of selective news leaks then was ratcheted up to try to get Paul in a circumstance where he could no longer make a living in Canada. This then was followed this past April 19th by a physical attack at the hands of the Jewish Defense League. We're going to be talking with Paul Fromm in these next 2 hours about what he has endured and what he thinks it means not simply for free speech in Canada, but what it means for the potential future of free speech in the United States as well. Paul, how are you, sir?
Very well, thanks.
Let's go back all the way to 1991 when Mark Glenn indicates, Paul, that this whole situation began for you in earnest. What was the first indication that you had up there that there were some things being directed against you that were really serious and were very vicious?
Well, Mark, I had been politically active since I was about 16, and in 1991, I had been a teacher for 17 years, and my political activities had included running for election federally once, running for school trustee three times and being elected once, extensive writings on foreign aid and the giveaway of Canadian taxpayers' money, also writing and organizing on for immigration reform and free speech. So I'd been politically active. The one thing I'd always been careful to do was to make sure that public statements of mine did not mention the fact I was a teacher or where I taught, as that all was irrelevant. There was a meeting of a particular group called the Toronto Mayor's Committee on Community and Race Relations, and this was a committee set up by the Toronto Mayor, and that group had a few weeks previously lobbied a meeting call not to permit a meeting by a group that I was addressing. Now, the lobbying turned out to be unsuccessful, but I thought to myself, this is outrageous. The government-sponsored body would be trying to take away the rights of other Canadians to free speech. So I went over to the meeting, and I wanted to make a presentation, but found out that I'd have to register much earlier, 2 weeks in advance, actually, to be able to get up and make a statement. So I thought, well, I'll take in the meeting and see what's happening. I did, and partway into the meeting, there was a Native Indian leader, and he was urging the committee to endorse all sorts of really repressive measures, including urging all meeting halls in Toronto not to rent to neo-Nazis and white supremacists, whatever those groups are. And he was rhyming off a number of different measures, and they ended up with and other measures as well. So I heckled them. I said, scalp them. Like, in other words, how far would you go? Well, they were quite outraged at that and threw me out. It was a kind of a nothing little incident that got a little bit of play on the on one TV show that night. And the next day, there was a newspaper, one of our Futron newspapers, gave it a little bit of a write-up on almost literally on the back page of the news section. And that would have been the end of it, except that I now know that when the TV coverage was seen at home by Bernie Farber of the Canadian Jewish Congress, And this was the account he would give later. He said, I was sitting there, when I heard Paul Fromm say, scalp him, I said to my wife, I know we've finally got him. He said, and the next day we got on to our friends in the mass media and told them who Paul Fromm was. Well, indeed, that's exactly what happened. The next day, the Canadian Jewish Congress got created a huge story of this nothing incident, because now the story was...
We'll be back. This is Mark Dankos America coming to you live from San Antonio on RBN. Stay tuned.
And be counted. Catholic priest calls for Christians to resist Bush's impending unjust attack against Iran. George W. Bush lied to the world to get the backing of the American people to attack Iraq. Now he is lying to the world to get the backing of the American people to attack Iran. The Catholic and Protestant clergy have failed miserably to come out publicly against the upcoming unjust attack of Iran. Therefore, the lay Catholics and Protestants should demand of their respective clergies to take a righteous public stand against this upcoming Iranian unjust war. Each one of us will render to God a strict account of what each of us did to stop these diabolical tyrants like George W. Bush, who, as roaring lions, go about the world seeking whom to murder. For additional facts concerning this upcoming Iranian unjust war, order the one-hour lecture by Father John Martinez entitled Stand Up and Be Counted. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on the web banner for more information and ordering.
PersonAlarms.com has all your self-defense needs. Check out our cell phone stun gun. Excellent protection from would-be attackers. It truly looks like a real cell phone. Also, check out our new electronic barking dog alarm. Containing microwave technology, this electronic watchdog sees through walls. The electronic barking dog alarm works when an intruder comes within 15 feet. The barking dog alarm will begin barking like a true-to-life angry German Shepherd. The closer the intruder comes, the more frequent and more threatening the barking becomes. You can purchase stun guns, stun batons, pepper spray, telephone voice changers, martial arts instructional DVDs, and the same tasers that you have seen the police use on TV and more at www.personalarms.com. That's www.personalarms.com. Or call 1-201-641-1442. Come visit us, personalarms.com. Don't be afraid anymore. Receive a free pepper spray by mentioning...
This is Mark Dankos America coming live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined today by Paul Fromm, the head of the Canadian Association for Free Expression, talking about Paul's assault at the hands of the Jewish Defense League on April 19th up in Toronto, and the fact that he has been the victim of something that began in 1991 that has now culminated in this latest situation that I just referred to. If you take the American Free Press, you'll want to turn to the May 7th edition. Mark Glenn has a very special story on what happened to Paul Fromm, and it's entitled Mainstream Mum, as in mainstream media, Mainstream Mum on Jewish Terror Attack. Paul, pick it up with where we were before the break. Go ahead, sir.
Okay, so just to review, I had gone to a small public meeting. I had heckled a native Indian speaker. There's a very brief little bit of publicity, which simply mentioned the fact that I'd been tossed out of the meeting. However, the next day, the Canadian Jewish Congress put out a press release saying that I was a teacher, I'd made a racist remark, and I should be fired. So now the story had become teacher ought to be fired for his remark. I had not been aware at the time, or I should say I hadn't really connected the dots, but I would later, that that was the same time, actually just a month or two before, another teacher in New Brunswick, in eastern Canada, had been fired, had been demoted from his position, essentially taken out of the classroom by the New Brunswick Human Rights Commission. Again, not for anything he'd said or done in the classroom, but because of his anti-Zionist religious writings. He'd put out a couple of booklets and books, and used to write a lot of letters to the editor. And so what I think the Canadian Jewish Congress decided was, we got Malcolm Ross, and now's the time to get Paul Fromm. I'd been certainly on their radar for a number of years, but now the attack began. So the publicity was entirely instigated by the Canadian Jewish Congress, and now it has become, teacher says something, teacher ought to be fired. Now, my employer at first rallied around me and resisted. The director of education at the time said that I was an exemplary teacher, and the board did hold a meeting. They got my side of the story as well, and then in what would become characteristic of them, they missed the principle of the whole thing, freedom of speech, and said, well, even though it had been on my own time, my remarks had been intolerable, and I was given a letter of reprimand. And things quieted down and life went on. I began to be aware, though, that the Canadian, that somebody out there was trying to buy a copy of a videotape. And what had happened is a little over a year before that, in December 1990, I had spoken at a meeting in Toronto of a group called the Heritage Front, and it was a Martyrs' Day rally. It was a rally for those who had died in some way fighting for freedom. And I was not the only speaker, but I gave a very short talk there about freedom of speech in Canada and about a man who'd gone to jail in Canada for his beliefs. And anyway, at that meeting, there was quite an eclectic group of people. There was a skinhead band that played after I spoke. There were some other speakers, some of whom spoke, I would say, a good deal more radically than I did. And my position has always been, I'd be glad to talk to anybody anywhere who wants to hear me. My appearing at a meeting doesn't mean that I endorse every other speaker. But I thought, well, you know, they could try to make that into something a lot more radical than it was. Not that I said anything particularly radical, but they would say, well, he'd been at a meeting where there was a speaker from Women for Aryan Unity there, and so on. So I could just see the sort of thing they'd try to do. So I was told that the organizing group, the Heritage Front, had been receiving strange requests for the audio tape videotape they had at that event from people they'd never heard of, from people that they pretty sure had never heard of them. So they thought there was something afoot, and so they tried to curtail the sales of this videotape. There actually had not been a whole lot of sales. And then in April of the next year, 1992, the Toronto Sun ran a big two-page article, full-page pictures, beginning on the front page, teacher addresses white supremacist rally. And what had happened was that the Canadian Jewish Congress had eventually bought a copy of the videotape, and it was now shopping it around the press, making copies and giving it to anybody who'd listen, and they finally found one of Toronto's tabloid newspapers that ran this story. And once again, the story had was not what I had said. In fact, on several occasions when I've in the legal proceedings over this, I've questioned one witness or another and said, if you would read this article over, could you tell me what it was I said at that meeting? And the fact was, there was almost nothing in the article about what I said. There was a lot of guilt by association. Well, this person said something, that person said something. Over here was a banner, and they called the Confederate flag, which was at the meeting, the flag of the Ku Klux Klan, which of course it isn't. But all of this defamation, you know, is sticks. And then, of course, the major point of the story was Canadian Jewish Congress and various others say, this teacher's a teacher, he's a racist, he ought to be fired. So that really had become, again, was the story. It wasn't what it was I had said or even done. And, you know, as a journalist, you probably would wonder, why would a newspaper write up a meeting that has occurred almost a year and a half before? You know, in the news business, that's hardly news. And it was, of course, all with the point of view of creating a controversy, and of course it had the desired effect. The Board of Education was really quite shaken, and they were in a dilemma because I had not broken my contract with them. I was a good teacher. They knew that. All my reports were exemplary, were good. And so, once again, they knuckled in for them, under to the pressure. They were not able to fire me, but they gave me a very severe letter of reprimand, telling me any repetition of incidents like that would very likely mean that I'd be fired. And then what they did was they threw the whole case down to the provincial government, because in those days only the provincial minister of education could revoke or suspend a teaching certificate. So they were saying, well, we don't know what we can do about this man. Contractually, he hasn't broken his contract, but if you want to take away his teaching certificate, be our guest. And when I look back at it, with a perspective of 15 years or so, I see it was absolutely not only a cowardly thing to do, but absolutely mischievous. So the Minister of Education had this land on his desk. Well, what's he supposed to do? And so he mulled it over for a number of months, and then just said, "Well, I'm not prepared to take away a man's license to practice his profession. If you've got a problem with him, fire him and make a recommendation that he lose his teaching certificate. But I'm not just going to arbitrarily lift his teaching certificate." And that was his initial position after sitting on it for about 5 months. But he came under tremendous pressure, from organized Jewish groups and a couple of others. And a month later, he modified his stand. He said, "Well, I remain troubled by all this, so I'm going to appoint an inquiry." So he appointed a one-man inquiry who was able to take evidence. They put out a letter to about 1,500 homes in the area of where I taught. Any parent or student could come forth anonymously and say whatever he had to say. And the only all I would know about that is the generality of what was said. I wouldn't know specifically who said what. And that, of course, makes it very, very difficult to defend yourself because if the village idiot comes forth with a report, that's a good deal different than, if a respected citizen. And so I was at a huge disadvantage. This inquiry went on for 7 months, and my union told me that I was the most thoroughly investigated teacher in the province, in the history of the province of Ontario, in a non-criminal matter. This was a really in-depth inquiry. And at the end of the day, the inquiry came up with somewhat contradictory conclusions. They said, well, on the one hand, I'd been a good classroom teacher, no evidence.
We'll be back, Paul. Hold on to that thought, and we'll get right back to it. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio on RBN. We'll be back with Paul Fromm of the Canadian Association for Free Expression. Stay tuned.
Have you heard of a privacy crisis? Odds are you're already immersed in one. The U.S. government is now legally tapping phones, monitoring emails, tracking purchases, and seizing property in record numbers. Banks are demanding invasive personal information for even the smallest transaction. Unfortunately, stalkers looking to harm you or your financial situation are using the same methods. So how can you protect yourself, your loved ones, and all that you own? Well, the first step is to purchase the most important how-to book you'll ever read. It's called Privacy Crisis by author Grant Hall. In minutes, you'll know the methods he himself has used and advised others about in order to bank anonymously, open a safety deposit box without a social security number. With Privacy Crisis, you'll discover how to avoid judgments, seal your credit files airtight, drop off the radar, and virtually disappear from those looking to cause you injury. The ebook and hardcover versions are available at www.privacycrisis.com. Grant Hall's Privacy Crisis contains information and legal methods the powers that be don't want you to know. Travel, bank, work, and live anonymously. Live free. You can also order Privacy Crisis by telephone. Call 702-433-6222.
How are you preparing ahead for the events in the future? In the near future, we know there will be those of us that will not be able to buy or sell. Stoves & More wants to help give you the freedom from the systems of the world and from skyrocketing fuel prices. Stoves & More is a dealer for all Amish-built wood cook stoves that will give you an independence you need to cook and bake your food, dry fruits and vegetables, heat your whole house water system, and heat your home. These state-of-the-art cook stoves are nothing like Grandma's old stoves. They have large, airtight, efficient fireboxes that give you an all-night burn, easily heating up to 2,000 square feet. Whether or not you're off the grid, we have products for you from stoves to Staber washers and 12 and 24 volt refrigeration. At Stoves & More, we have the perfect products to complete your preparations. To the first 10 people who purchase a stove, we'll send a free copy of our newly released DVD, Getting Started with Wood Cook Stoves. Stoves & More offers the best selection at the lowest prices on the web, so visit us at www.stovesandmoreonline.com. That website again, stovesandmoreonline.com.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places. Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs for your information. It discusses America in prophecy, the Antichrist, tyrants and wars, secret societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F. 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715.
Mark Gancross America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined today by Paul Fromm, the noted free speech activist in Canada, who is the head of something called the Canadian Association for Free Expression. We've been talking about the last 16 years of Paul's life that culminated in an attack on his physical well-being on April 19th at the hands of members of the Jewish Defense League. But suffice it to say, at this particular point in the conversation, we've been talking about the results of a very thorough investigation of Paul that took place in Peel, Ontario. He was put under the microscope by the educational establishment up there in Ontario, and it's noteworthy that during his 24-year teaching career as an English instructor, he had been hailed by Robert Lee, the director of education in Peel, as a, quote, exemplary teacher, unquote, and repeatedly received high commendations on his work. Yet in the aftermath, Paul, of this investigation, you indicated that they kind of came up with a mixed review. What did they say exactly?
Well, the the report found that I had been a good classroom teacher, that I had not discriminated against students, that my behavior was entirely professional and proper, and that I was well regarded. However, the report also found that I had failed in my duties to inculcate, this is the way the law read, to inculcate by precept and example Judeo-Christian principles such as honesty, integrity, etc., and all other virtues. Now, that was in the Education Act. Now, the man who wrote this report, a man by the name of Ralph Cowan, said, well, the wording was wrong. The wording was discriminatory in a multicultural society, and all of the virtues should be understood to mean support for multiculturalism and ethnocultural equity, whatever all those things meant. And considering that that's what it ought to have said, I failed in my duties. But, on the other hand, that wasn't really enough to fire me. And the law should be changed to read more the way you wanted it to read. Well, you look at that and you just say, well, that's absurd. I fulfilled what the word said. There was no indication that I was not a model of integrity or honesty or virtues like that. But I failed to, according to him, to inculcate virtues or principles that weren't even in the act. So this landed on the desk of the minister, and he had the right, the power at that point, to suspend or cancel my teaching certificate, and he did nothing. Because with such a report, how could he do? How could he act? Because there was no evidence I'd failed as a teacher. My employer was again under tremendous pressure from the Canadian Jewish Congress, from a prominent associate of the Canadian Jewish Congress in the school who was constantly trying to subvert me. At the hearing, the Canadian Jewish Congress brought forth student compositions which had been improperly obtained. The principal at the time told teachers not to discuss my case with students. If there was a student did have a problem, they should be sent to the principal, and the principal would talk about it with the student. But two teachers assigned their classes compositions. Well, what did they think of Mr. Fromm? Now, this was right after all that really inflammatory publicity. In fact, the very week of the publicity, the student compositions were a mixed bag. Some said, well, they didn't even know, hadn't even heard about it, or others said, well, I have the right to my thoughts, and some said they supported me, and others said, well, I was a horrible person, obviously, if the press said I was, I'm ought to be fired. So, but these compositions, with all of the students' names whited out, had been given to this inquiry. So it just showed the degree of double dealing and so on that was going on. So my Board of Education said, well, again, I should be reprimanded, and they moved me out of adolescent education into adult ed. And that suited me fine. I was quite happy to move into adult ed. But I now have hanging over my head an even stronger letter of reprimand, and this time with a list of some of my alleged sins such as saying that multiculturalism was meaning the curtailment of our freedoms. And, of course, it does. Multiculturalism in Canada has meant the massive curtailment of freedom of speech, and I'm a prime example of one of its victims. And I've also made comments such as Canada was being inundated with hordes of illegal immigrants and so-called refugees who are scamming the welfare system and in many cases bringing criminal records to Canada. So for opinions that were no stronger than those that could be seen on at least some of the right of center papers in this country, I was now being told any further incidents like this and you will be fired.
We'll be back with Paul Fromm of the Canadian Association for Free Expression What is persistent disrespect for multicultural and ethnocultural equity, folks? Pretty grim stuff. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Since 1988, Herbal Healer Academy has been the global supplier of the finest natural medicines. We specialize in keeping you alive and healthy. We provide outstanding products like ECX, colloidal silver, olive leaf extract, oregano oil, and hundreds of herbals, oils, books, and educational materials. We have homeopathic detox solutions for chemtrails, radiation, MSG, and aspartame poisoning. We also train naturopathic healers via correspondence education. Why wait any longer? Go ahead and do it today. Sign up on the web and receive our new 120-page catalog and a current Herbal Healer newsletter free. Simply log on to herbalhealer.com and check out the online member testimonials and our hundreds of exceptional products. That's herbalhealer.com, your website for safe, effective, natural alternatives and education. That's herbalhealer.com.
People who use Cartivite know about the pollutants in our body and want them out. For over 5 years, Cartivite has proven itself time-tested. Here's Dr. Mattson, a naturopathic doctor's thoughts on Cartivite.
In our mind, there isn't such a great big mystery to disease anymore. This basic tenet of yeast in the gut and metals in the liver covers at least 70-80% of the diseases that we see. When we do our program, you know, herbal formulas like Cartivite, and you see someone who could barely walk up a hill now going for regular jogs, 2 months later, we know we're doing something right. It's a well-thought-out formula. I mean, the idea of it working on yeast and metals both at the same time and liver function is dead on. You'll find, I think, that it'll work more than just on heart problems and circulation problems. It'll work on other problems as well.
For more information, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit our Cartivite link at rbnlive.com. That toll-free number again, 1-877-928-8822. 8822.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy a vacation to the beautiful Ozark Mountains. Howard Creek Resort is nestled conveniently between the cities of Bull Shoals and Mountain Home on Bull Shoals Lake in the natural state of Arkansas. Howard Creek Resort offers easy access to excellent fishing and water recreation of all types. The excitement of nearby Branson music shows and Silver Dollar City is accented perfectly by the many attractions located here in the heart of the Ozarks. Horseback riding, water skiing, scuba diving, hiking, caves, and rock climbing are just a few of the many activities that are available to do in our area. Howard Creek Resorts offers it all. Whether you're staying for the weekend or for a month, Howard Creek Resorts is the place to be, an excellent place to stay, and a valued traditional family vacation resort. Visit our website at www.howardcreek.com or call 1-877-253-7690. Come visit us for a lifetime of memories.
This is Mark Dancost, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our special guest today is Paul Fromm of the Canadian Association for Free Expression. We're chatting about the events that began for Paul in 1991 and that culminated in his physical assault at the hands of the Jewish Defense League on April the 19th. This is an incredible story that Mark Glenn has been following with the American Free Press, and if you turn to the May 7th edition of that publication and go to page 5, you will see a piece entitled Mainstream Mum on Jewish Terror Attack. That's talking about what happened to Paul Fromm, and we're, of course, trying to uncover a little bit more of that here with Paul this morning. Paul, I wanted to ask you just briefly, these two teachers that violated an agreement and violated confidences by having these kids write these essays, do you have any reason to believe or any evidence that these two teachers were recruited by outsiders for this purpose to exacerbate the situation, or do you think they were just acting on their own?
Well, it took me a good many months to identify them. You know, they didn't come forth, and when these student compositions were given to the Canadian Jewish Congress, they were passed on to the Canadian Jewish Congress, but there was no mention made as to which teachers had solicited these. So this was very much an undercover, sneaky sort of thing. I was able, with the help of several other teachers, eventually to piece together enough clues from these compositions so that I could identify the two teachers. One of them was a prominent associate of the Canadian Jewish Congress. And so I grieved them under union rules. And unfortunately, because they were brazen enough to deny it, I was told that the evidence was circumstantial. And so the complaint in the end went nowhere, unfortunately. But this was the sort of real sneaky character assassination that was going on, and there are a lot more incidents along the way, but I'm trying to move the story along, as it were. And the problem I faced after I'd been moved into adult education was this serious letter of reprimand listing a number of things that I had done and saying that any repetition could lead to being fired. And among the things, as I mentioned just before the break, was that I had denounced employment equity, or that's what we call affirmative action, as anti-white racism. And, of course, it is. And I wasn't the only one who said so. A man who a year or two later would become the Premier of Ontario ran on a political platform that basically said just that, that affirmative action was anti-white discrimination, and he wanted to put an end to it. So it's not as though my ideas were that, far off the mark. I'd also stood up for the right of historian David Irving to speak. he visited Canada many times, but in 1992, he was ordered deported in handcuffs after pressure by, believe it or not, the same Jewish lobby groups that didn't like him because of his controversial stands on World War II, particularly some of the comments he'd been making about the so-called Holocaust, that he felt that there were serious problems with the mainstream story. And so I stood up and defended his right to speak. And so there are a list of about 10 different comments I'd made or incidents, and I was told any repetition of these could result in my being fired. So the lawyer representing my union, the Ontario Secondary School Teachers Federation, wrote to the board and said, could you tell us what it is he can do and not do? Give us some guidelines. You're saying any repetition of these incidents. Well, what is it he's allowed to say and do politically? Give us some guidelines. They refused. They said, no, we wrote what we wrote. Let him govern himself accordingly. Well, that meant either I had to be very, very careful about any public statement or even going to certain meetings, or basically drop out of politics entirely, be extremely careful knowing that any meeting or even a statement could be used by these powerful political people to create a new story, and perhaps get me fired. So it wasn't just something that I might intend to do. Even attending a meeting, if the press wanted to write it up and say, teacher attends immigration rally, reform rally, and if somebody said, well, that was a white supremacist meeting or a racist meeting or whatever, there would be all over again. So I knew that at any moment I could be the victim of another created story. And so I proceeded cautiously. I certainly didn't stop my political involvement, but tried to do my very best to keep out of the media, especially in and around the Toronto area where I taught. And so it went for for 3 years, 3.5 years. And meanwhile, the case of the same teacher was proceeding, and that's Malcolm Ross. He was a very devoted Christian who'd written quite strongly about Zionism, and he'd been removed from the classroom and given an administrative type of job. And that case had gone all the way to the Supreme Court, and in April of 1996, the Supreme Court upheld it, saying, yes, what had been done to him violated his right to freedom of religion, but you only have the right to nice religious views. And I mean, it sounds incredible, but that's exactly what the Supreme Court of Canada said. Yes, a person has a right to freedom of religion, but he should only be able to express nice views, whatever they are. So because Malcolm Ross had been quite critical of Zionism, he was expressing views that weren't nice, and therefore it was okay that he was removed from the classroom. So with that being now the position of the Supreme Court of Canada, my enemies were emboldened. They hadn't forgotten about me, but things have been quiet for, as I said, 3.5 years. And now they, right after the Supreme Court decision came down in April of 1996, they cranked up the campaign against me. Now, what was happening was not anything I knew about, but I found out that later found out that my Board of Education had hired a man to do an investigation on me, and this man was a notorious far leftist anti free speech man who collected lots of government grants, a fellow by the name of Alan Dutton, who lived in the sort of far end of the country in British Columbia. So he's a bitter enemy of free speech. He was paid by the Board of Education to do an investigation on me. In other words, find out what had Paul Fromm been doing these last few years. And that's what he did. So through the fall of 1996, unbeknownst to me, he was gathering together material and gave it to the various groups like the League for Human Rights of B'nai B'rith, and eventually to the my employer. And his investigation culminated in his obtaining from a notorious communist professor, a man by the name of David Lethbridge, a videotape that had been taken at a memorial service in Urbana, Illinois, in November 1994. This is how far afield they went to try to get something on me. And the memorial was for the late Professor Revel O.P. Oliver. And Professor Oliver, of course, was one of the absolute giants of our movement, a great classic scholar. He was originally a writer for National Review, but fell out with William F. Buckley, because William F. Buckley, of course, is a traitor to the conservative cause. He was a prominent member of the John Birch Society at one point, and was just a fearless writer and journalist. Professor, but also did a great deal of writing of essays and books and booklets and so on. I mean, he died in 1996, and a couple months later, some of his admirers held a memorial, and there were speeches and remembrances, and among the people there were lawyer, the Atlanta attorney Sam Dixon, and former representative David Duke, and myself, and there were about 20 people who gave brief comments about his life and what Reverend Oliver had meant to them, and the effect of his ideas on them. And a videotape had been made of this, and had been marketed by the National Alliance. And this communist professor had obtained a copy. Now the story was, I had addressed this memorial. David Duke, of course, was said to be a former Ku Klux Klansman. The National Alliance were a neo-Nazi white supremacist group. And not an awful lot was said about what I'd actually said at the memorial. It was all guilt by association. And my second big crime was that in March of 1996, I had organized a free speech conference on our winter break in Vancouver, British Columbia. And that, again, at the other end of the country. And some of the speakers had bad political reputations, were accused of being having made racial statements themselves, people like the great journalist Doug Collins. So now I was again accused of having consorted, and that was the word used, consorted with racists and anti-Semites. Of course, an anti-Semite is anybody who is in favor of freedom of speech in Canada, apparently. So now the Peel Board of Education had two further sins on my part. I'd gone on my own time one weekend to this memorial in Urbana, Illinois, for Revel Oliver, and I'd organized a free speech conference. And now they moved swiftly and said that was it. I had continued to show persistent disregard for multiculturalism and ethnocultural equity, and they were going to fire me. Well, we launched a campaign. I had a great lawyer, Doug Christie, and we met with the board in public sessions, in private session, four times, and really battled it out with them. But in the end, I was fired, and my union immediately launched a grievance, and legal things go very slowly in Canada, so that grievance didn't begin to be heard for another year, and it was heard on and off from April Fool's Day 1998 to 2002, when the decision finally came down that 2-1 the firing was justified. And after that, I did have a couple of other jobs in education, but since then I've essentially been earning a living outside of education and devoting a good deal of my time almost on a full-time basis to freedom, to the free speech battle here, and to immigration reform. Once the final decision had been made by the arbitration board in 2002, some months later, the appeal board made a complaint against me to the College of Teachers. Now, the structure had changed since I was fired. No longer was the minister responsible for teaching certificates, but a mixed bag called the Ontario College of Teachers had been created. All teachers had to belong to it, had to pay dues, and elected some of their governors, and the others were appointed by the government of Ontario. So it was a self-governing college, and it had the right to issue or to suspend or to revoke teaching certificates. So in 2003, this complaint was launched. As I say, legal proceedings go very, very slowly, so the hearings didn't begin until 2005. We had 3 days of hearings in January, and then there was a long, long adjournment because of another teacher's case, which set the College of Teachers back quite a good deal. The rules are very, very loosey-goosey about governing teachers' conduct now, and all of the accusations against me go back to the period prior to the College of Teachers being in existence, and the courts, in the meantime, have ruled that in the case of another teacher, and this now applies to me, that I would have to be judged by the old rules rather than the new ones, which in some sense would be more advantageous to me. And my argument has been I was judged by the old rules because you'll recall in my long story that the Minister of Education back in 1992 had commissioned an inquiry. The report came in 1993, and having received the inquiry, the minister considered it, and he was the only one who had the power to revoke a teaching certificate back then. He declined to act. So the accusations had been made, they were thoroughly investigated, and the minister of the day declined to act, and so therefore judged me not to deserve to lose my teaching certificate. These hearings, though, are now have started up again. in early April, and our proceeding will continue on and off through the spring. And it was at one of those hearings on April the 19th, as I rounded the building to go into the office building that contains the offices of the Ontario College of Teachers, I saw a protest outside. There were, I'd say, about a dozen people there, a number of them carrying Israeli flags and some of them carrying placards that had said something about terror or terrorism. I never did see the full sign or what the slogan was. I went into the lobby of the building and attempted to get into an elevator, and three members of the Jewish Defense League stormed into the elevator. There were some office workers from the building as well, and two policemen followed them. So we were crowded into an elevator, and I thought, I don't want to be in the same elevator as these people from the Jewish Defense League, one of whom had a flag, one of whom had a placard.
Paul, we'll be back, and we'll pick it up from there. This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We'll be back with Paul Fromm of the Canadian Association for Free Expression to discuss the events of April 19th in Toronto, Canada. Stay tuned.
Catholic priest calls on Catholics and Christians to resist an unjust attack against Iran. Father John Martinez, a Catholic priest, speaks out to declare the Catholic Church's true teaching, that it would be a mortal sin for Catholic soldiers to attack Iran. In a one-hour lecture, Father John Martinez warns about the Jewish plot to rule the world and to use the United States to ignite the flames of World War III by its satanic plan to unjustly attack Iran. He exposes that George Bush is Jewish and how Congress is controlled by the Jews. Father John Martinez gravely warns of nuclear weapons being used by the United States and the threat of the possible end of the world. For additional information on how you can help stop World War III, order Father John Martinez's CD entitled An Unjust Attack on Iran, available for $10 by Father John Martinez. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on our web banner for the address.
World War III? Rising fuel prices? Financial collapse? Trucker strike? North American Union? Our world has become a very fragile place, and we need to be prudent and plan ahead. Don't wait for an impending crisis to become reality. Then it will be too late. Stoves and More wants to help give you freedom from the systems of the world. If the grid is down and fossil fuels are not available to you, how would you heat your home, cook your food, and heat your water? People, we need to be more independent and able to take care of ourselves in a natural disaster, political crisis, or financial crisis. Stoves and More is a dealer for all Amish-built wood cook stoves that will give you the independence you need to cook and bake your food, dry fruits and vegetables, heat your whole house water system, and heat your home. With the right application, you'll be able to use these stoves all year long, not just during the winter months. At Stoves and More, we have the perfect products to complete your preparations. Stoves and More offers the best selection at the lowest prices on the web, so visit us at stovesandmoreonline.com. Food, water, and a wood cook stove are keys to your survival in a crisis. Take action!
Eating a well-balanced diet filled with whole foods is sometimes hard to achieve, so supplementation can be beneficial. But WholeFoodToday.com believes that if you want to supplement, you should be doing so with products made from complex and natural whole foods, which the body can recognize and utilize as food, rather than with synthetic formulas of isolated vitamins made in chemical factories. Whole Food Today is dedicated to bringing you the finest health products at an incredible value. Nutrient formulas for men and women, super green food formulas made from over 30 vegetables, legumes, sprouts, immunity health formulas, coconut oil, krill oil, and many other products made 100% naturally. Visit us today at www.wholefoodtoday.com or call 1-800-989-9840. That's www.wholefoodtoday.com or call 1-800-989-9840. Whole Food Today offers free shipping to all orders anywhere in the continental U.S. Whole Food Today, empowering people to attain and maintain extraordinary health.
back. This is Mark Danfoss, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our special guest today is Paul Fromm, who is the head of the Canadian Association for Free Expression. We've been talking about the last 15 or 16 years of Paul's life and what has been going on in his situation as it relates to the exercise of free speech in Canada, the opposition of those who are against free speech and who define free speech as a persistent disrespect for multicultural and ethno-cultural equity, quote-unquote. In Paul's particular situation, he has been, of course, as we've discussed this morning, victimized by selective leaks of news stories and subsequently by harassment by the Canadian Jewish Congress and the League for the Human Rights of B'nai B'rith. And all of that was directed initially at simply having him removed from his teaching position. He's also had various attempts launched against him to have his teaching certificate revoked. And finally, this past April 19th, things escalated to a point where he was en route to a College of Teachers hearing in regard to these attempts to revoke his teaching certificate, and was assaulted by certain members of the Jewish Defense League. Paul, we're going to be interrupted a few times in the next 10 minutes for frequent commercial breaks, but I'll have you go ahead with this. If you'll bear with me for about 10 minutes, you'll be interrupted a couple of times, and then there will be a longer period of time for more extended conversation. But go ahead, sir.
Yes, so I had gotten into this elevator, and three members of the Jewish Defense League had gotten in as well, and I thought, this is not a good situation. I'm going to try to get out before the elevator starts up. So I went and moved toward the door, and one member of the Jewish Defense League shoved my chest, said, "You're not going anywhere, you're coming with us," and he then grabbed my neck. My throat, and the policeman was immediately on him. The doors flew open. Everybody tumbled out into the hall. There was shoving and pushing and fighting, and a female police officer was jumped by one of the female members of the Jewish Defense League, and it was all over probably in under a minute. The two of the three members of the Jewish Defense League were handcuffed and arrested, one for the male for assaulting me, the female for assaulting the police officer. Both of them, I think, were charged with obstructing police. I then got into another elevator and went up to the hearing on the sixth floor. When I got there, I found more police because several other members of the Jewish Defense League had gotten up there with their flags and placards, and the police had seized the flags and placards and were escorting them out of the building. And later on that morning, after the police had interviewed me and so on, the hearings resume for the day, but so the police did charge the person who attacked me with assault, and I made some representations to the legal firm that was representing the college that the Jewish Defense League has a long, long history of violence. In Canada, a member of the Jewish Defense League a number of years ago planted a pipe bomb outside the home of Ernst Zundel. And
we'll be back with Paul Fromm of the Canadian Association for Free Expression. We'll take up this theme of the history of the Jewish Defense League and its activities in Canada when Mark Danfoss America returns live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
A message for all homeowners and prospective homeowners out there.